Monday Night Football had an improbable ending, and you know who was conducting another one of his late-game comebacks, which many of you believe that he never does, but actually he does it quite often. Incredible game last night. Joining us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline, is Rhett Lewis from the NFL Network, at Rhett NFL. That's R-H-E-T-T NFL on X, on Twitter. He's also got a Big Ten podcast with Adam Carriker, who played here for a brief moment in time. So I might ask you about some Big Ten football, because we got a Big Ten school in the market. That would be Maryland.
Yeah, you do.
Even though, as a Maryland guy, I wish we were still in the ACC. But that's another story altogether, Rhett. Thanks for the time. How about last night, man? I mean, there's so much to the end of that game. The Philadelphia decision to throw the football, though it was really more of an option play.
Yeah.
Kirk leading a drive down the field that was just eye-popping because it happened so quickly. Your thoughts on not only that game, but an incredible NFL weekend?
Well, I guess I think everybody should just be glad that Matt Ryan wasn't calling the plays in that game. I don't know if you watched the Manning cast, but totally lost track of what was happening as he was talking to the Mannings, that he was like, yeah, I think we should just go down, kick a field goal real quick, and then come back and try the onside kick. I was like, whoa, what?
Wait, down six?
Yeah, well, it was the most, I just think he got caught up in the moment, lost in the situation. Right, okay. The Eagles still had the ball at this point. Like, they were up three, right? And I don't know, it was all, you got to go back and watch it.
Maybe he was expecting Philly to score a touchdown.
Yeah, that's probably what it was. Yeah. It just was like, oh, they can hold them to a field goal here, and everything's still good.
Yeah.
Anyway, on that end of game sequence, I don't really have a ton of issue with the play call from Sirianni. Like, coming in on that little flare out there to Saquon. Like, obviously, if they execute, it's game over. Because it's open, it's there. I get it. You could have cut the time down, you know, by just running it, not getting the first down, kicking the field goal. But Kirk went down there in like 40 seconds. They just still had time for that. I have more of an issue with the way they played defense. Just letting them have the sideline. It's like free access, just pounding it with no timeouts and running down the field. Like, that's where I took the biggest issue, was the way that the Eagles defended Kirk Cousins and the Falcons down the stretch.
It was really big for him. We refer to him around here as You Know Who, because his name alone is just incredibly triggering to so many people.
Of course.
But it was great. I'm a fan and love him, and I was so happy for him. You know, with respect to the third and three call, you're right. The play works. I mean, it's throwing to your kid in the backyard with nobody covering him, and he just dropped it. But here's the thing that I kind of think about all the time. It's like, it's kind of simple. It's like, what's better for Philly? For Atlanta to have more time or less time when they get the ball back? And the answer is clearly less time. So, I mean, I would have thought about, you know, two tush pushes for 3 yards, because that probably works. But you got to get the clock rolling, and the only way you don't is by throwing an incomplete pass. And even though the chances of an incomplete pass – look, if he's covered, Hurts is just going to run the ball or go down right there in bounds.
Exactly.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I'm with you there. I get that. I just, you know, it's a layup. You don't turn down a layup. You just don't do it. And so I think, you know, 10 times out of 10, except for that one, Saquon makes that catch and it's game over. But, all in all, I thought it was incredible to finally see the Atlanta offense start firing a little bit with Kirk. You know, it's like it took 58 minutes for that thing to get fired up a little bit.
Yeah, it was better last night than it was in the opener, in part because they had him in the pistol the entire game against Pittsburgh and never ran any play action, which he's been effective at. By the way, back to your Matt Ryan comment. So I wasn't watching the Manning cast live, but I saw, you know, kind of what he said when the 2 minute drive started. And I thought he made an interesting point. Not the, you know, kick the field goal and try for the onside kick. He said to Peyton and Eli during that final drive, he said, I don't know about you guys, but when I went to a new team or had a new offense, The most comfortable part of it was the 2 minute, and it got me into rhythm, and it was the most confident I was in. And Peyton and Deli both immediately agreed. It's funny. I think that stuff is great, by the way, when you're watching those quarterbacks talking and they bring up a point like that, which made sense because clearly Kirk was in rhythm. But you made a great point. Vic Fangio, who's been great. Just he's playing that too deep, and there's so much room for them to throw it and get it down into position with 1:40 left.
Exactly right.
Sorry, I'm talking too much. I want you to talk. Tell me about the weekend.
No, you're all good. Go ahead.
Tell me about the weekend overall and just the NFL's unpredictability.
Good call. I mean, I think injuries are telling the story right now. I mean, for all of us that play fantasy football, you're like, what do I even do? I mean, like the amount of star power that's out right now with injury. I mean, like we're seeing guys get banged up before the game even starts. Like Evan Engram goes down in warmups, and that wasn't even the only one. You know, you're like you're getting all these soft tissue injuries, and now Deebo Samuel's out for a number of weeks with a calf, in addition to McCaffrey being on IR. And I'm just like, what is going on right now? I know we kind of always get a little caught up in injuries that happen. I think early on every season, it kind of takes everybody's breath away a little bit. But this feels like more than the norm. You know, like I don't know about you guys, but man, I mean, I'm looking out here and I'm like, you know, the amount of high caliber players that are missing time, substantial time. Now they're saying, you know, on the broadcast last night, it's like all of a sudden, you know, AJ Brown went from questionable to now he's going to be out like 4 weeks.
Yeah.
The McCaffrey thing going too. On up here? Yeah. So that's been one of the big themes to me is obviously, you know, star power out with injuries. And then, you know, I think we're seeing, you know, we've seen some subdued quarterback play. And I do kind of get a sense that, you know, I think it's going to pick up here in a couple of weeks because I do feel like that, you know, when you cut down on the preseason time and you got guys not playing a lot in preseason, it takes a minute to kind of get this thing charged up a little bit. And so I would expect, you know, second quarter of the season, we see a little bit more of the pizzazz that we're accustomed to from offenses. But right now, it's kind of been a little bit subdued.
You know, I had a friend of mine, and I haven't, Denton, I haven't told you this morning, but he pointed out that Derek Carr played a bunch in the preseason. He played multiple series in the first two preseason games for the Saints because he wanted to be out there with the new system with Clint Kubiak in New Orleans. He also made the point that C.J. Stroud played a bunch in the preseason. I think I've gotten away, Rhett, in recent years of thinking that playing in the preseason means anything because nobody plays. But the fact that Derek Carr wanted to be out there and look at the way they've started, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it means something. And I also think it means something with fit. And I don't think that can be overstated. Like, we talk about it all the time with my buddies Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks on the Move the Six podcast. Like, for quarterbacks, it's about play caller, it's about playmakers, and it's about protection. And he is getting that in spades, obviously, with the play caller. Rashid Shaheed has become the best deep threat in the NFL with those two touchdown passes of almost 60 or more on each one, 59 in the first game, 70 this last week. Alvin Kamara is rejuvenated in this Clint Kubiak offense. Makes a ton of sense that he is, with his style and the way he can cut, that he's working really well in that system. And then Talisi Fuaga from Oregon State, who was the Saints' first-round draft pick, has been an absolute stud for him at left tackle. So, like, he's getting the three Ps right now, and you're seeing that, you know what? He's a pretty damn good quarterback when you support him a little bit.
So let's look at the NFC right now, because the undefeated teams through 2 weeks are Minnesota, New Orleans, Tampa, and Seattle. I don't think anybody had that group through two games. Who's legit and who isn't?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, the more I look at it, I do think there's some 0-2 teams that are going to get healthy and they're going to find their way into contention in the end. Like, Sean McVay and his staff are too good to let – and now they have been hit hard with injuries, right? Puka Nacua, Cooper Kupp, number of their guys on the offensive line are out So like they're getting their fair, more than their fair share of it. I think that they're going to come back and find a way here at the end to kind of be in the mix. But when I look at the NFC, the rest of the NFC, I think the Vikings are legit. I think Sam Darnold is a real deal. Again, you go back, same thing I said with Derek Carr and Kubiak. Darnold going to QB school with Kyle Shanahan last year, and now in a very similar offense with Kevin O'Connell, they're finding ways to accentuate his skill set. Again, he's got playmakers, and that offensive line is under the radar, one of the better ones in football. I think the Bucs are legit as well. Just a grimy team, gritty team with Baker Mayfield. I don't know. I guess I'm a little bit I don't know if I'm fully sold on the Seahawks yet. I think it's going to take a little bit of time for me there just with the new head coach just to kind of see how that thing continues to roll. But overall, it is kind of strange to see all these teams that didn't make the playoffs last year sitting 2-0.
Talking to Rhett Lewis from the NFL Network at Red NFL on X on Twitter. So big news yesterday before the Monday night game was the benching of Bryce Young in Carolina. Andy Dalton will start. Who's to blame for the fact that it looks like through two games he's regressed, and that's hard to do from where he was last year?
I mean, I watched some of the tape on that, and it's not pretty. I mean, you know, he's got any functional quarterback, like marginally functional quarterback in the league, are going to make some of the decisions, I mean, are going to make better decisions than you're seeing Bryce make. You know, just like stuck on number one, not being able to get back to number two, and then the rush comes, and it's all panic, right? I think there's a lot of panic in that offense right now. Now, here's the other thing. It ain't all on him. That's a bad football team. It is a bad football team, and it has been for some time, and it's going to take some time to get that thing back to being just competitive again. I think Dan Morgan is a really smart guy as the GM. I think he's a really good evaluator and a good football mind. I think you're going to have to give him a little bit of patience. Now, the problem is recent history has shown that organization doesn't have a whole lot of patience. So, you know, I hope that they get together, hammer out this plan, and just kind of continue to grind. And you know what? Maybe it's okay that Bryce isn't there to just continue to get beat up, right? I think maybe a little bit of a break and a little bit of breath might be okay for him for a minute. I don't know that this is waving the white flag on his tenure as a Carolina Panther and as their starting quarterback. But here's the thing. Like, when you look at this, Dave Canales is a more proven play caller and offensive, you know, game planner than Bryce Young is a quarterback. So when you look at the results, you're like, well, it more than likely you can't pin it on Canales, and because he's had success, he's had a track record rejuvenating a career like Baker Mayfield last year. I think at this point you got to see, like, all right, the easiest one to replace here is Bryce Young, and that's unfortunate, but that's the way it is.
Yeah, I think Tepper has probably replaced our guy here, Dan. Snyder is the worst owner in sports, certainly the worst owner in the league, and meddlesome. Go back to that trade. But to your point, Sam Darnold, Geno Smith, we've got plenty of examples of guys that were completely written off. Now, those guys are 6'3", and this guy appears to be about 5'8", or 5'9". Yeah. So there is that. What are your early impressions of Jaden Daniels and our team?
Yeah, I think Jaden's going to keep you in games. I think there's just, you know, that's where I'm at with that. I would love to see him connect with Terry McLaurin a little bit more, and I'm sure folks there in DMV would agree. You know, they got to get that part of it going there. But I just think that his poise and his ability to extend and to create is going to make for competitive football games. And if they can kind of, you know, continue to put points on the board, even if it's field goals, and even if it's seven of them, I think you're going to be in games. And so, you know, I think, you know, Jaden's only going to get better. And I would just say, as long as he can minimize, you know, the hits that he's taken, things are going to be ultimately pointing in the right direction for this team moving forward. So I do think Dan Quinn is a great coach. I think he's a great leader of men, and I think that they'll continue to kind of come together as a group and move forward in a positive direction.
All right, let's talk some college football real quickly, because you do a Big Ten podcast with Adam Carriker. You can find it wherever you get your podcast. And you're also part of Indiana Football, I guess, radio as well. So Friday night, Denton and I were talking about this. It's kind of an underrated game on the board. Nebraska and Illinois, two undefeated teams. Nebraska back?
So quick update, and I didn't haven't updated Denton on this yet either, but I traded in my Indiana radio gig for a Big Ten Network gig. So I'm on a broadcast crew for Big Ten Network, but I only bring that up because I was at Nebraska last week. And I sat there, and the question I asked to Matt Rhule right after that insane tunnel walk atmosphere when they come out on the field for the first time in Lincoln in front of the 399th consecutive sellout crowd there. They're going to be at 400 on Friday night. That place is going to be an absolute zoo. Memorial Stadium is a monster. So I asked Matt Rhule, as the fans are going absolutely nuts for their team again, I'm like, Matt, the buzz around college football is that Nebraska is back. But these folks never left. And he got such a kick out of it. And he was like, man, it is humbling to be here in the midst of this crowd, this group, these fans, this city who support this team through thick and thin. I'm telling you, that atmosphere is going to be low-key the best atmosphere in college football this weekend. Now, I get it. Nebraska, Illinois doesn't open up eyes a ton, but Dylan Raiola, the true freshman quarterback, is the real deal. And I think Brett Bielema is a great coach on the Illinois side of things. They're playing good football there, but they're going to walk into a buzzsaw in Lincoln. And I'm telling you right now, this Nebraska team is definitely back.
I mean, just listening to you describe it, like I've been to, there was a several year period where a group of us just picked a college football venue to go to every year. I've never been to Lincoln, but seeing it the night against Colorado and this Friday night, it's incredible that place. And by the way, it's not just football that they support. They go to everything. Their basketball team's not very good, and they sell out that arena every night. It's an incredibly
devoted. Women's volleyball. Yeah.
Volleyball.
I was there at the women's volleyball match before the night before the football game. Sold out. Sold out. Crazy. 10,000 people.
Yeah. Nuts. Is Ohio State the best team in the Big Ten, or is this Ohio State-Oregon game going to decide it in a few weeks?
Yeah, I think here's the other part of it. I was at USC week two in their shutout victory over Utah State. Obviously watched their LSU win week one. Let's not take USC out of that conversation.
I know Utah State was competitive against Utah last weekend.
Yep. And so what I'm saying is that this USC team, I think you always expect them to be good on offense, like kind of no matter what. Like Miller Moss, may not be as talented as Caleb Williams, but they're going to score points. And he is a really good operator of that offense, and he's got a good arm too. But that defense is where things have changed. Like, I think USC fans should really enjoy Dan Lynn being their defensive coordinator this year, because he's going to get some head coaching offers next year for what he's done with that group. So I wouldn't count USC out of that, but man, I got October 12th circled in big old red marker in Eugene to see those two teams go at it for sure.
Love having you on. Really appreciate it. Hope you're well.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Rhett Lewis, everybody, at Rhett NFL on X. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team 980.com.